Freight trains are getting longer and longer in the U.S., some stretching for 2 or 3 miles. These longer trains allow for more goods to move more efficiently, which lowers fuel use and costs for the railroads. But as William Brangham explains, these trains, especially when they stall, are also cutting some communities in half.
The impact of these longer trains on the daily lives of Americans is the focus of a new investigative report from Investigate TV and ProPublica. It highlights the journey of children on their way to school in the rural town of Hammond, Indiana, where parked trains create a literal roadblock for kids, and they're forced to crawl over and under them to get to school. Another concern, long trains can halt traffic, stranding ambulances, fire trucks, and other emergency vehicles. And for the record, BNSF Railways, which is mentioned in some of this reporting, is a funder of the NewsHour. For a closer look at all of this, we are joined by one of the reporters on this series, Josie Sturman of Investigate TV. Welcome to the NewsHour.
Thanks for having me.
Those images of those children crawling under and over those stalled trains is just so jarring. I want to read a bit from your report here. It says, an eighth grade girl waited 10 minutes before she made her move, nervously scrutinizing the gap between two cars. She'd seen plenty of trains start without warning. I don't want to get crushed, she said. These stalled trains can literally start at any time?
Any moment, no notice, and these children are just waiting. They wait at the bus stop in the morning to see if they can get through. They'll collect in large populations. Their parents are sometimes with them. They'll look under the train, they'll listen for noises, any indications that it might be moving. When they feel like it's no left choice, they're out. They go, they give it a try, and they risk their lives doing it.
It's just so striking to me that a train is not required to sound a signal or make a clear, demonstrable sound before it takes off.
They definitely have some sort of signal, but as you mentioned, these trains could be miles long. So even if they honk a horn or give some sort of a warning light at the front of the train, the odds that the kids at the back or at the middle are going to hear that may not happen.
Right.
So there is no notice, and they're in the most dangerous sections of these trains, crawling through, crawling under, so not having any notice is a really big problem.
Why are these trains stalled and stopped the way they are? Is this a mechanical breakdown? What is happening?
Breakdowns can definitely be a factor when this is an issue, but that's just one reason. Another is rail traffic. You know, it's basically switching practices. They might need to get one train into one place, another into another, and they need different lanes or space to do it. It could also be a crew timeout issue, just like with airplanes and pilots. When they hit a certain number of hours, they have to shift out, they have to get rest. It's very important. So there are a number of factors that mean they stop. Now, best practices would say they would stop what they say off crossing in an area where they're not going to impact a community, say like Hammond or anywhere else in the country where this happens. But that's not exactly what happens most of the time because they want the trains to be in the fastest, most efficient place to move forward and keep the process going. So if that means they stop in the middle of a community and they limit the first responders, they cut off communities, that's the cost of doing business, I guess.
This issue of blocking first responders, tease that out a little bit more. What happens in those cases?
Well, we're talking about critical minutes here. If you call for an ambulance or you call for police, every second matters here. If you're having a heart attack, something's wrong with your child, you don't want to wait. And in many communities, these are life and death scenarios. They cannot get around these trains. Just in Hammond alone, they've stationed their fire stations and their ambulance response compensating for this, knowing that it's a problem. Not everybody can do it. The rail lines have been there for decades, so they can't always do that. They try to plan routes around that. Doesn't always work. We know that there have been deaths as a result of this. We've seen fires. We've seen injuries. It's very real because if it takes them miles out of their way to respond, that's the time they're not getting to you, and that has real-life implications.
I want to play a clip from an interview that you did with a firefighter in Hammond, Indiana, who was talking about the pushback that they've tried to do when they've gone to the industry about this. Let's listen to what he had to say.
The cities and towns and states have tried to challenge the railroads. Obviously, the railroads have come out well ahead, and so I don't know if they're giving us, you know, the middle finger and saying we're going to do it because we've won in court, or if they're just ignoring it, but we need help. We need help.
The Association of American Railroads, we reached out to them. They said safety is our top priority. What has the railroad industry told you in regards to your reporting?
Same thing. Safety is their priority, but at the moment, they pretty much have all the power here. This is a regulatory gray issue, so no one forces them to move. Nobody can tell them they can move. No one can really fine them. This is an issue where it's been fought at court. It's now potentially going to go to the Supreme Court. Attorneys general across the country are fighting to get some sort of decision on who's in charge here, because right now no one is. So they can do what they want, and safety may be their top priority. They don't want to see these accidents either. But the demonstration here is they're willing to sit and wait in many communities, and they're not doing anything about it. So obviously, safety isn't always the top priority. The rail union themselves, the people who are the engineers and the conductors, have said today it was about greed. It's about money. It's about them making money. And that's what they see as the priority. They're not showing that safety is the first priority. If they're willing to let these trains sit for days or at a time, it's just a crisis.
I know you've talked to lawmakers here in D.C., including Secretary Buttigieg at the Department of Transportation. What is the ideal remedy here that lawmakers would like to see done?
The remedy is potentially fining repeat operators, but that seems like a long shot at this point. The remedy could also be deciding who actually regulates this problem, who can tell them they can move, because as I said, it's a gray area. Nobody really can at this point. At the moment, the only thing they have is funding, and there's going to be grants given out by the Department of Transportation to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars to just try to get rid of these at-grade crossings altogether. That's the only thing they have at the moment. There is safety legislation moving through as a result of the situation in Ohio with the hazmat situation. They're going to try to do a few things with that to address blocked crossings, but it's not anything specific in terms of regulation. So this isn't going to get solved through regulation at the moment or through legislation at the moment, and all they have is money to throw at the problem.
Josie Sterman of Investigate TV, such tremendous reporting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.